All right, folks, thanks for sticking it through Sunday afternoon, 3:35. This next talk, we're going to continue on the sustainability theme, and it's Ruth Seeley and her two panelists are going to talk about what it takes to sustain a project once it's successful.
All right, hi.
Thank you.
The camera doesn't hear. Oh, now the camera hears me. Awesome. Hi. As she said, my name is Ruth Seeley. I see many familiar faces. I may have met you in many open source places over the years. These days, I run an OSPO at a data analytics company called SAS, and I am president of the Apache Software Foundation and serve on the OSI board. I make my way into lots of communities, but somehow this has all led to me talking a lot in the last year or two about the sustainability of the open source ecosystem, and in a lot of ways. I think often when we say the word sustainability, people hear money. We need more money, that it's about funding, but there's so many more aspects to it than that. And so I've been thinking a lot about how we got here and the history of open source. And so I'm going to give you the tiny bit, but if that's interesting to you, if you can Google my name, if you look up this panel and the future of open source, I go through the whole history of how we got here. But in short, when in the late 1900s, some guy in my dorm slid me a Linux CD, the ecosystem was much smaller. It wasn't truly this ecosystem yet. It was some open source folks doing this thing that was useful to them. And we had a lot fewer needs in terms of funding. And we didn't have any mentors because we were still building the ship while we were sailing it across the ocean. And this ocean turned into the whole planet, because now that little thing that we were just kind of doing because it was useful underpins every piece of software that runs everything that we all use and rely on every single day for everything. And that turned into so much more. And that's why sustainability means so much more than the funding, even though that's a part of it. One of my favorite news articles in open source history is in January 1999 in the New York Times, there's this grammatically fantastically terrible headline that says, "Free access to a software code may come into its own in 1999. I would say our free access to a software code has finally come into its own, but along with that has come a lot of regulatory movement, not just, so here many of you are probably familiar with the CRA, so much is happening in Europe, but around the world, wherever you may be from, there's a lot happening with an eye on open source software. And a lot of that is because the security landscape has changed so much. Because you don't generally threaten things that aren't interesting, that aren't used, and now we are the thing that everyone uses. And so security is a concern for the sustainability for the future. The funding is a concern because meeting those security requirements are going to cost money. And like I said, we didn't have mentors 20, 30 years ago because we were all figuring out as we went along. And so now, an interesting side effect of that is we also don't have mentors in mentoring. So that's the next thing that we all, those of us who are measuring things in the late 1900s, have to figure out is how to be good role models to the next generation to grow the community so that it continues to be successful. And if you look up sustainability, like what does that really mean? You generally get some sort of definition about sustain, like keeping things as they are for the future, except that's not what we want either. I think we actually need a new term because we want to continue the growth of the success of open source software into something even bigger than what it's become. So I will stop there and let my two friends who are experts in bits of this thing that I'm talking about introduce themselves and explain what sustainability means to you and your part of the open source ecosystem.
Hello, everyone. I am Richard Littauer. Hi. I'm a PhD student in New Zealand. I also run a network of community open source program offices. A community of university open source program offices, so academic open source, called Curious. And for the past 8 years, I've been running a podcast called Sustain Open Source Software about the sustainability of open source software. So we've had like 400 episodes about this, and I have no idea what it means, and I hate the word sustainability. So, awkward. I also ran GNOME last year. Don't do that if you live in New Zealand. It's really bad time zones. So what does sustainability mean to me? It's a completely meaningless word. It's actually like a bad word. Keeping things going doesn't talk about the fact that most of our communities are broken in really important ways. They're either broken because the funding is wrong, or they're broken because other people are trying to extract value out of them, or because we're burning out our maintainers. So I really don't like the word sustainability at all, because every single project can get better. I'd rather have like growth or something else. I also run a project, or I'm part of the organizers for Open Sustain Technology, which is the largest database of sustainable projects for the climate crisis. And that's like the other word for sustainability, right? Like, let's keep environmental sustainability going. And the fact that those two terms bleed over all the time makes the word even worse. So when I hear the word sustainability, when you ask me about the panel, I kind of cried a bit, and I'm still working on that.
Richard skips the part where he's also linguistically brilliant, and now that I know he hates the word too, I am going to depend on him to come up with a better one.
Linguistically, I ain't brilliant, so I'm intimidated now. So my name is Bob Calloway. I've been an open source contributor for going on 2 decades, and you referring to things as the late 1900s is quite disturbing to me, but I guess you're accurate there. In addition to being a contributor for a couple decades, my current role is running open source security at Google, which we recognized several years ago, quite before the Log4Shell incident, but that certainly helped to generate some positive velocity on the problem at hand, was that Google needed to do more to help address some of the shortcomings that are happening in upstream. Like, there's tons of work to do, right? And we wanted to do our part. So that represents an engineering team of 60 folks who contribute upstream, trying to work on building systems and some solutions to these problems. It's not meant to be a cure-all, end-all for everything that ails open source, but we want to do our part. In addition to that, I'm also a board member of a couple different foundations. One of them is the OpenSSF, which is the Open Source Security Foundation, which is a group of projects, working groups, and folks which have like-minded interest in how do we make open source more secure. Also need to make open source continue to be available, which is a dimension of security, which is if it doesn't exist anymore, that's an existential risk to all of us, to all the critical infrastructure that you mentioned as well. The other thing that I'm a board member of is something called the Alpha Omega Project. This is a directed fund where Google, Microsoft, Amazon, and Citi have all donated multi-million dollars to help fund durable improvements in various upstream ecosystems. So, many of the great improvements that we've seen at the Python Foundation, the Apache Foundation, other places, the people that have had the time and energy to focus on solving those problems in the foundations have actually been funded through the Alpha Omega Project. And again, funding isn't everything. It's certainly a part of the dimension of how do we get things to be sustainable. I would agree that, like, I don't know that we want to perpetuate the status quo when we talk about sustainability, but I think of it as, like, do we have positive forward momentum that we can sustain? So that's really how I think about using the word. It's like, do we have that positive velocity? Are things getting better on multiple dimensions? Not, are we perpetuating patterns that lead to burnout, lead to maintainers walking away, cause that existential risk? How do we turn the curve and then make sure that we don't just dip down in the, you know, which is great. Again, you can throw money at the problem. Macroeconomic event can happen. That can disrupt things. So we really are thinking about how do we make step changes in things which go everywhere from business models to expectations, being very clear around, like, open source licenses are great. They talk about what the expectations should be and must be. But also, as we talk about kind of the responsibility of those who are consuming in the light of regulation and many other things, we have to be evolving. How do we want maintainers, foundations to all step up and evolve their thinking in these models? Because again, open source is a great place. We all want it to continue in certain facets, but things have to change in order for things to continue to be healthy.
Bob started to pre-answer my next question. Thanks, good job. So historically, all of these open source foundations, as they exploded, because February of 1998 was when the term open source was coined. The OSI existed by the end of February, the ASF was incorporated in March, and now I couldn't even begin to guess how many open source foundations there are. But they all tended to operate in these silos, doing whatever the thing that they had formed around was. And one of the most fantastic accidental side effects of the CRA, I think, is that they've all started working together in new ways around security problems, compliance problems, funding problems in ways that we've never seen before. And since you've both been involved in various organizations over the years, I'd love to hear your thoughts on how we can strengthen those relationships even further and build on that collaboration.
So the first thing is you mentioned organizations and foundations. Those are different things. When I think of foundations, I often think of 501c3s, 501c6s, which are a tax code in the U.S. All of us, for some reason, are from North Carolina or have connections there. Really weird. That having been said, I really don't like my home country, so ugh. There are foundations that are outside the states, and there are foundations here of Europe that have to deal with the CRA, as you just mentioned, but most of the American software foundations haven't had to deal with the CRA or the EU. As far as I know, there's a few people who are working in those foundations, people like Simon Phipps, et cetera, who are like, hey, we have to understand the legal ramifications of what we're doing. But the majority of open source foundations or organizations in the U.S. can't fund the manpower to deal with legal geopolitical issues across the ocean, which is okay. I mean, it's a different thing. Thank you. But when you talk about how do we band together, what I think we need to have is better communication between foundations in the spheres where they actually have the ability to have influence and power. For Europe, I think that means a better understanding of what foundations are in Europe. There's a really interesting mailing list called the Floss Foundations mailing list that I'm not on, but it's really useful for talking between foundations, and that's the best. And oftentimes I've heard that if you have a question, you just ask that mailing list and they'll answer it for you. I think we need more of those. And I also think we need more funding to go to things like FOSDEM, where we all meet each other and actually have the ability to say, after two or three beers or non-beers if you're non-alcoholic, hey, I'm really scared about this other thing, and I'm what do I do about it? Because that's honestly kind of how most foundations work. There's someone who asks that question, and someone helps out. So that's what I look forward to. In a much larger world where all of a sudden there are politicians asking those questions of us, we need to make sure that we have more people who are doing law in open source, because there's very few open source lawyers, which is super, super awkward. And I'm really tired of emailing the one lawyer I have. In fact, my lawyer did say, please stop emailing me on such short notice. So it's great, but like, we need more people to actually go into that field. If you're a young person and you want to have a good paycheck in the future, please go do an open source law degree. Anyway, that's my thought.
I think I would plus one your notion of how do we get people to not only continue to have the right conversations. I think the other big thing is, like, how do we create space for people to focus? And because it's a very fragmented political landscape, it's a very fragmented geopolitical dynamic. Yeah. However, many of, and so I guess a little bit of context. So one of the areas that we facilitated kind of some of this information sharing was really around how do the various package managers address the security threats that they're seeing? And you start to look at it like, how are we all handling multi-factor authentication? And you know, you start to go around the room and people realize, well, when we turned it on at the at Foundation X, we were inundated by password reset requests because people were going back and they were screwing up, you know, associating their YubiKey. We were drowning, and you know, volunteers were really struggling with that. So if you're going to do it, roll it out in this way. And people started nodding along and going, okay, cool. We're all actually going to go down a likely quite similar roadmap in adding security capabilities to the registries. We can learn from each other, not always take the exact same technical approach and just in the different language nuance, but we can really learn around what was the feedback. How can we evolve quicker? Can we skip making the same mistakes and move faster? And since we created that securing, I think we call it the Securing Software Repositories Working Group, we've had that running now for about 2 years. We've agreed on kind of different kind of ladders for, we all kind of say level one means you do the following things. Level two means you do the following things. And it's really just to help to motivate, this is where we are on the journey. We want to continue to move forward. If you give us money, or if you come to contribute, these are the areas that kind of continue to move us in a good direction where we can all rally to a cause. That has been really helpful for the various foundations and various registry operators to not only articulate what good looks like, which gets people interested to get out their checkbooks, but it also just makes that there be an actual sub-community of people that are dealing with like-minded problems. When a phishing attack happens on crates.io, you can quickly jump into a various, you know, chat rooms and say, hey, has anybody else dealt with this? Does anybody else have a contact at this DNS provider to help figure out how do we take down this phishing domain? And within a matter of minutes, we've helped to create that network effect. So whether it's the mailing list that you mentioned, we're creating that shared context and the ability for people to focus on the problems. And I think that's been, on this, at least in the security domain, has been super influential over the past couple of years.
So I'll ask one more question and answer myself before we take questions. And the question is, what you feel like is the one thing in this room of people who are interested enough in open source community to come to the community dev room and want to know about sustainability? What's the one thing we can ask each of these, however many people you are, to go do to ensure the sustainability of the ecosystem? And for me, it's to go to be the mentors, to go find someone, preferably someone's, to bring into the ecosystem. Raise your hand if you're in open source because someone said, hey, let me tell you about the cool thing that I do, and you can come do it too. Yeah, That's at least half of you. That's how you got here. So be that person for someone else and grow our community.
Sure. Go to therapy. No, like really, like the number one thing you can do to help your open source community is to spend time figuring out how to deal with your own emotions. This is the number one thing that people fail to do. So I know an amazing maintainer, Gina Hauske, who works on Octoprint. She's German. She's awesome. She has a giant punching bag in her office. She'll answer an issue and then go punch the crap out of a bag for 5 minutes. And that's how she sustains her momentum, right? Is being able to say, I'm not going to be affected by this, and also acknowledging I'm a human, and that person was really annoying, and I don't want to take it out on them. And so a lot of being sustained, like, I said that because that's a thing I never hear at open source conferences. But, like, really, we're all humans, and we suck at being human, and we're all trying to learn how to do it better. And fixing yourself is probably the easiest way to fix open source. That's an unconventional answer.
I guess two things jump to mind. One is maybe a bit of a different variant of what you said, which is don't be afraid to articulate boundaries. It's okay to say I'm not willing to take contributions. It's okay to say I'm not willing to, you know, be badgered by enterprise companies to go have X, Y, and Z outcome happen. It's okay to draw a line around what you're willing to do and what you're not willing to do. But oftentimes when you leave that space open and open to interpretation, folks will get taken advantage of. And I think that's something that we all could potentially do better at. The other dimension to this is I think we're obviously in a space where, you know, the favorite two-letter term that's probably on everybody's mind at some level that rhymes with shmei, things are going to change for the better, for the worse, who knows, right? It's up to personal interpretation. I think embracing that change, being honest about how we feel about it, being honest about what we like about the new model, what we don't like about the new model, I think over the next couple of years, like what it means to be an open source project is likely to evolve. We can either control that or we can dig our heads in the sand. And I think really where open source has really shined is when we look at a shared problem together, we're honest, we're open, we're transparent about where we're coming from. That's what has made it so awesome. There's a lot to look in the future and say, hey, we're gonna have unprecedented capabilities and we'll be able to do many things faster, maybe better. I don't know about cheaper, but we'll see. But on the flip side, like, there is an existential risk to, you know, a bifurcation in what we think about as open source today versus what it's going to be in the future. And so just, I guess my thought is just embrace the change. Let's make it what we want it to be. If we pull back, I don't know, it leads me into a place where I'm like, oh man, I don't know, it's not a super positive mental space to be in. But I do think the more that we get ahead of it, we define our boundaries, we say what we want to do, how we want to be interacted with, what we want in terms of community norms, continuing those conversations, you know, that's a step in the right direction.
Can I answer the question again?
Well, I had a new answer too, so go ahead.
Okay. It's not all about the individual. Please organize and fight fascism. It is the biggest threat to open source. So do whatever you can. Join your local leftist communities. Join your local tech unions. If you don't have a tech union, make a tech union. If you don't know your neighbors, get to know your neighbors. And every single line of code you write is political. Know that. And know that the entire idea of open source depends upon licensing, which is a legal thing, right? It's not, that's not like random. Like, these are laws. So think about under what jurisdictions you're writing your code and how you can fight fascism in your own country or abroad. It's not just about you, it's also about the systems we live in.
Thanks. Thank you both. We got to it, all things open, and even when we start out, this is not about money, it somehow always ends up about money anyway, so high five both of you. I think we do have time for like one question. I got a mic run. Somebody else has to stand there for the people on the camera. If I had a dollar for everybody I've heard this week apologize for being American on stage, we could fund open source for the next 30 years.
Yeah, if we're talking sustainability of the community, isn't it very important to try to get them young, like get education involved, try to introduce open source software in schools and such?
And while I run the microphone back down the hallway here, I actually One of the things I did when I worked at Red Hat for a long time was we helped start an open source miner at the Rochester Institute of Technology. And so definitely, at least in the US, we're seeing a lot more programs at the university level focused on open source. And I think that's where we get a lot of contributors from. But if that is an audience that is interesting to you and your community, build structures for them, because...
You have a mic already.
It cut out when I was coming back down. Okay. The thing. Build structures for them, because university students come and go very quickly, and so you will find that you have someone drop in, pay attention for 6 months, maybe 2 years, and then they wander off to get a job. So build structures that keep them in the community.
So since we don't actually have a session about this, I figured I'd ask. There are a lot of sessions this weekend about the impact of AI on contributors and about, you know, contributor burnout and software sustainability. What are your thoughts on contributor-less projects, projects that are completely operated and managed by AI without contributors, and that as a path towards sustainability?
We're out of time, sorry.
Yeah, he just flashed that he gotta go. I guess my personal thought is, I think we will see that in some extent. I think you're going to see varying hybrids of it, to where maybe, you know, the actual maintainers are setting the roadmap, but the bulk of the actual code is delivered by an agent. I think you're going to see what we see today, where you have an influx of, you know, slop. I think you'll see high quality vuln reports come from other entities, and you'll see certain communities embrace the technology as a tool. Others will use it as a default operating model. There's obviously, you know, some level of pros and cons there. Again, I think we need to experiment. I think we need to be honest about where it works, where it doesn't work. There's certainly a dimension to it that means that the attachment that we have emotionally to code as being an artistic output seems to be something that's going to change in some dimension. It's scary. But embracing the medium and saying, you know, how could we use this for good, I think is something I would encourage. But yeah, it's going to fundamentally change it. But I think seeing a hybrid of models, is we can already kind of see this emerging. I think we need to continue to share about openly, where is that working, where is it not working, and go forward from there.
We're super duper out of time. Oh.
One, okay. Could look up the Luddite movement. That's all I'm going to say for that one.
And where was the one more? Oh, all right. Oh.
Yeah. When you talk about sustainability, we always talk about money, places, and everything. But what is going on with our education system? We are not teaching people that failure is not a big deal, it's not a problem. We're building new languages because we couldn't teach the old languages. We're talking about AI. And system engineers, they have no idea what a vector actually is in practice. And they've been for 5 years in college. So what we're doing with people, that actually is not money that sustains the open source. It's not the code that sustains the open source. If there's no someone there to build that code, to understand that code, and to mentor more people, what is it going to do in the future?
So the education problem is a whole nother session that we definitely don't have time for. But I will tell you, I have a 16-year-old in the US who is in a computer programming program where his teacher is saying, just vibe code it, it's fine. So let me know where that's going to end up in 10 years when that's how all of our developers have been trained, is just vibe code it. But there actually is an adjacent problem, I think. Ooh, this really is a whole other session I don't have time for, which is that the education system, at least in the US, even well before we get to the writing code part, tanked in the pandemic. If you look at what has happened to the math and reading scores and the competency level of students now compared to 5 years ago, you would be appalled that it is even possible to have dropped like a rock. So if you have, 56% of Americans can't read at the level of an 11-year-old, a sixth grader if you're American. 56% of Americans cannot read at a sixth grade level. And it's getting worse. So if that's the state of the education system, we got a big problem before we even start to teach them to code or be a part of a community.